sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Big news, Greek debt may get another reprieve. The U.S. remains an economic oasis, and the markets are digesting negative global and geopolitical news. Our special guest today, my son Brett Horowitz. We're getting back to the basics. All this and much more on episode number 395 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome. It is now the middle part of January 2015. And here we are on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. My name is Andrew Horowitz. Thanks so much for joining me. We have a lot to talk about. We have some good things that we're going to be talking about, some bad things about the global economic environment. And we're going to be getting back to the basics today. For those of you who are more of the, we'll call them the novice investors, new investors, maybe first timers to the show, we're going to have something for you today, getting back to some of the very, very beginnings of what investing, what the stock market is all about. And my son, as I mentioned earlier, Brett, has prepared a variety of different questions, so we'll go through that. Now, it was an interesting week. Let's talk about this, what happened in the markets around the world. It was a wild week. We had the markets in the beginning of last week moving up 3% and down 3%. Not in that order. First, it moved down 3% over 2 days, and then, like a miracle, of course, the Fed came out and talked about a few different things, but they said, hey, you know what? Well, maybe we will, maybe we won't raise interest rates, and left some room for discussion, and the markets took that as a go, a green light, thumbs up, hey, let's go do some buying, and rocketed up 3%. Ended the week on a down note in the U.S. after all the things that we saw, the deflation in Europe, the continuing struggling in Japan, of course, what's going on in France, etc. But the unemployment number that came out on Friday, 5.6%, better than expected jobs added on a monthly basis, and that flew a little bit into my thesis of, you know, I think we're going to see some disappointing news on the economic front when it comes to jobs. Now, I will share with you that while the numbers were better, the two areas that I thought were going to be the hardest hit, both retail and the area of oil sector and the industry within that, they did see continuing slowdown in hiring. Now, this is obviously something that we need to look at. The bigger issue and what was blamed for the drop in the market after we saw the number come out on Friday was that there was very little wage growth. Now, one of the things that the Fed looks for is wage growth to increase. In other words, the amount of money that people are making on a regular basis increases, allowing them to spend more money along with more people working. So when you tie those two things together, you have more people working, and they're making more money. And that is an ingredient for inflation. Now, of course, the Fed is looking for about a 2% inflation rate. And when you see that part of the puzzle and the piece is put in that we see better unemployment, and we see that it's down to 5.6 versus 5.8, even though the labor participation rate or the amount of people that were working has dropped as a percentage of total population in the United States, you know what? That's good, but where's the wage growth? Where's the fact that maybe there's some hiring pressure? And without that wage growth, a lot of people are scratching their heads saying, is this just a statistical anomaly when it comes to the employment situation? So that's kind of what went on at the end of the week. Now, I want to mention to you that I got a few emails from people. It seems that there was a glitch on the disciplinedinvestor.com website, and they told me that they were trying to get some information about the different strategies, the Arrow and the TDIMG growth strategy. And for some reason, something didn't work. Well, we got it fixed, just to let you know. So if anybody has been trying to get that information, and for whatever reason, you tried last week sometime and it didn't work, well, it's up and running now. So that's good. And you can go back and check it out over on the disciplinedinvestor.com for the Arrow strategy, which is our algorithmic strategy, or TDIMG managed growth. which you know about and we've talked about before, you can get the virtual tour and check it out. Now, a couple more things before we get to our guest. GoPro, I talked about this a lot. We got some several different emails, lots of tweets on this as well. I had mentioned earlier in the week and kind of hinted on it in the end of last week, the previous week, that we were starting a short position on GoPro. And the good news is that it seemed that there was others that had the same mindset. We had talked about several months ago that towards the beginning of this year, towards February, we were going to start adding to a position and initiating and then adding to a position short. We saw the fundamentals were questionable, a lot of competition entering into the fray, and questioning whether or not the GoPro cameras were nothing more than the absolute must-have Christmas and holiday present for 2015, but will that sales pitch and that fever continue? So we looked at the chart, we looked at a variety of things. It is right now sitting at about $60 or so, give or take a couple of pennies. That is right on a level that is, I would say, potentially going to see some resistance, or it is possibly an area that's going to be a hole moving down. You need about a dollar on the downside and take a look at that. So when you look at the overall chart pattern of GoPro right now, it's a bit of a toying cost, but we're going to continue with this position until we get either stopped out or get our target and then take our profits from there. Now, finally, the ECB early in the week also had a lot to do with markets. There was news out that they were studying bond purchases, but as usual, had no definitive plan. Now, Germany and the ECB kind of, I guess they blinked when it came to Greece. They said, you know, well, we're kind of prepared for a Greek exit if it happens. On the other hand, they did say that, well, maybe we're thinking about easing the debt terms. And they're doing that because they're trying to set the stage if the Syriza party does, in fact, win and there is a commotion made that they say, hey, we're not paying these deals. We're not going to be continuing our austerity program. We're just not going along with the plan. Well, there's at least something in the back pocket that they could say, well, you know what we'll do? We'll ease the terms of your debt that you owe us instead of you just defaulting on it, which would be very bad. So right now, the stage is being set for this whole scenario. And I think that it's kind of interesting what we've been seeing right now in terms of the fact that really it's very disappointing. Europe looks very weak from an economic standpoint. They look weak from a oversight standpoint. They look weak when it comes to sticking by their word and doing what they say. Really, confidence is lost. I've lost confidence. I mean, I really, in terms of some of the European leadership, a lot of talk, very little action. But still, we have seen that the bonds of the European countries, Spain, Italy, Portugal, excluding Greece right now, Germany, France, are all at record low levels. The yields are incredibly low. And you compare that to many of the other countries around the world, it's amazing considering the fact that their economy is not that strong. You would think that if the economy is not that strong, their yields should be much higher, but it's not the case. And that has to do with a lot of the change in the dynamic of the Fed and their policies on where they're going to be raising rates and how they are approaching their quantitative easing program or that lack thereof, and what's happening also around the world with Japan and with Russia and with China, and add on top of that all the things that Mario Draghi is talking about. We'll talk about some oil, gold, and a few other things that are coming up, but let's get to our guest and talk about back to the basics. And as I promised last week, we have a special guest today. His name is Brett Horowitz. Yes, that's my son. He's going to college up at UCF, doing some great work up there. And we were on a cruise. Remember, we were on that cruise a couple weeks back, and we got to talking about, well, you know, the podcast, what's going on, what I talk about recently, what I talk about. And he said, you know, Dad, I'm thinking maybe you should get back to some basics. And for some people my age and younger and the young adults out there, maybe talk about some of the more kind of generic things about what is the things that you do and about finance and all that. So I said, hey, you know what? If you want to do that, why don't you come up with an idea, sit in with me on the podcast, and you can then ask me away and we can talk about it. Anyway, so Brett is here today, last day of his fall, his Christmas vacation. So Brett, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Hey, Dad, how's it going? Yeah, I just wanted to bring it back to the basics for some of the younger crowd, as well as the people who are very in-depth in the stock market, maybe open up their eyes again and just go back to the basics.
Well, that's good. I mean, that it's funny because I get that question every once in a while. You know, we do sometimes some shows that have like all these really kind of advanced discussions about things. We talk about all sorts of technical things, all these different indicators. Anyway, so a lot of times people write me and like, can you go back to basics? And sometimes I have to scratch my head and think, okay, well, that's a good point, because people that are listening to the podcast don't always know what's going on exactly. They want to kind of get in there. Right. So what do you got? Give me some of your thoughts. I know you kind of you wrote some things down and had some thoughts. What are you thinking?
Right. So whenever you're home, you're always saying, oh, the stock market's up. Oh, the stock market's down. But in general, what is the stock market?
Is that what I say all the time?
Yeah, I mean, always you're like, oh man, the stock market's up or down, or I always see you on watching the TV on that show, and there's always a million green and red arrows going up and down, and I just had a question.
In fact, I think it's funny because I'll get to that, but it's funny because it is confusing when someone who doesn't know about like what the markets are, when they look at like the screens on my desk or they look at the TV, it's like, but to me, I guess my eye is trained over the last 25, 30 years. I'm like, oh, well, that's what's going on. I can pick it out really easy, right? So the question, what's the stock market? So that's a good question, because it's a big question, actually. Because I can tell you, on one hand, the stock market is like the biggest casino in the world. You know, you put your money on a number, or in this case, a stock, and you make money, you lose money. It goes up, it goes down. But essentially what it is a conglomeration, a grouping of companies that have decided that they are going to sell part of their ownership to the public. And what they're going to do from there is that they are then going to be able to be looked at and valued. So making it very easy, let's say that a company is worth $1,000, just a number, $1,000, okay? And they divide the company up into shares. So let's say there's 1,000 shares. Each share is worth $1,000. Okay, so what happens from there is that we look at the market and we can say, well, that stock is trading and people will bet whether it's going to be good or bad. So now what happens is that the people out there can come to the stock, quote unquote, market, like a supermarket, and buy a stock or sell a stock and look to make money. The whole idea is to invest and look to make money, and different people are seeing different things at any given time. Does that make sense?
Well, yes. Okay. So what I got from that is, you have the budget of essentially what the company's worth, yep. And then it's public so people can buy and share and sell these quote-unquote stocks. Well, what exactly is a stock? Is there? So you said, let's go back to the reference of the $1,000 company. So would that mean there's 1,000 shares, or each share or stock is worth a specific amount of money?
Well, right. So the first thing is, so let's answer this one thing at a time. So the first question is, what is a stock? Essentially, it is, right, it is a company that has decided to become a publicly or partially publicly owned entity, whereas maybe some of the directors and owners still have shares, but the public owns the majority. And what they do is, we can see what's happening in terms of their earnings, how much money they make, and how much they're spending, their decisions and all that. We can kind of track that. Versus a private company, you can't do that. And then what happens is, each share is valued dependent on the earnings power of the company, as well as the prospects for the future for the company. So there's a lot of companies out there that maybe don't have any earnings. You know, they don't make any money. But what happens is that people are like, well, one day they're going to really make a lot of money, and they're betting on that. So for example, there's a lot of companies in the biotech area, the healthcare, the drug manufacturers, that have not provided any kind of earnings. As a matter of fact, they're losing a ton of money. And what happens is that they may have, let's say, a cancer cure that they're working on. So if they get this cancer cure, what's going to happen is, well, that stock's going to go up dramatically, right? Well, people are willing to bet on that, even though they're not making money, even though the stock is technically worthless right now until the cure comes. So each share is going to be worth some value that is determined on how much money the company makes, how much people are willing to decide that it is worth now and into the future, and maybe how much money they have on hand, like cash and assets. Maybe they own a lot of things. Maybe they actually own a ton of real estate in Manhattan. And what happens is, you could take that and look at that and say, okay, well, they own all these real estate and they're making all this money. And we could then say, I'm willing to put my money into this at this price. So the market, like any other market, is a function of supply and demand. If there is a demand for a stock, if there's demand for a company, a demand for an idea, well, then people are going to want to buy it. If there isn't, well, they're going to sell it or it's going to be a much lower value. So, and by the way, there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of stocks you could choose from.
Right. So in specific, I'm looking up here, quote, let's quote Apple for a second. So as of November 25th of 2014, they are worth $700 billion and their stock or worth right now for each share is 112.01 as of January 9th at 4 p.m. So how does someone, how does the public determine that this stock is worth $112?
Right. So Apple's a good example because everybody knows it. So the company is the largest company in the world by what's called market cap or value. Basically, you take the number of shares that are outstanding. The company issues shares to the public. So they take the number of shares outstanding and you multiply it by the price, which you said, I think, was 112.
112,
recently,
correct.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm not sure what the November number was that you had there, but we could bring that up to date. We take the number of shares outstanding, we multiply it by the price per share, and we get what's called the value of the company, as you mentioned, $700 billion or so, or the technical term is called market capitalization, the capitalization of it, okay?
Fancy.
Yeah, woo. So now, how does the public then determine not only the price, but what are they willing to pay?
Right.
That's the bigger thing, right? So are you going to pay $112? Now, just to give you a little perspective here, and I'm going to ask you a question. You know, the stocks that trade at $5.
Right.
Google trades at close to 500 right now. Okay. It's right on 500 closed last week.
Pocket change for me.
Sure. So now Apple trades at 112. Now I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
The company that trades at $10, $100, another company at $100.
Right.
And another company at $500 per share.
Okay, I'm following.
Can you tell which is worth more? Which is a bigger company?
Well, I mean, obviously, because, well, I feel like this is a trick question, but I'm going to go with Google because it's worth $500 a share. So I feel like that would be the company that's worth the most amount of money because, in general, $500 a share is a lot more than $10 a share from that other company we talked about.
But let's back it up. And you're right about one thing out of all of that. It's a trick question. Okay. So what happens is that since we're multiplying the share price by the number of shares outstanding, the one thing that we didn't know in that question was how many shares were outstanding. So if Google only had one share outstanding, it's worth $500 the whole company. Right? So that's not the case, right? And we know that Apple's the number one size company in the world in terms of market cap. Okay. So Apple's bigger than Google. The price of the share is not a determinant of the value of the company per se. Okay. The difference is that Apple had shares that they were out, you know, that were out there, people owned. Well, they split the shares in half. Actually, not in half. They split the shares 7-1. So if we take Apple, for example, I'm going to get my calculator. Take Apple, and we look at the 112, and we multiply it by 7 because they split the shares by 7 not too long ago. Okay? Apple shares pre-split, $784.
Okay.
Now, that still doesn't mean that Apple's worth more than Google because Google's 500. We don't know the splits that have gone on historically. So the thing is that the determinant of the value of the company and whether or not you want to invest in it today at $112 is very – there's a lot that goes into that. One, and we talk about this in my book, The Disciplined Investor. You know, this is something that we talk about. As a matter of fact, in also
I was just going to back you up. Is that the book with the cute little mustache on the front?
Another one with the mustache discussion.
just checking. Okay.
Yeah, me with the mustache. You got to see it. That was back in the day when I thought it was okay to still have a mustache. Now it seems like it's not. But beards are coming back.
Well, was that one trip we went scuba diving, right? I'm going to shave the mustache. And you had that giant pale part on your face.
Yeah, that big lip that I had that was sticking out for forever, it felt like. So when you look at the value of a share and you go to what's called the fundamentals or the true value. So what does the company own? How much of their company selling? We know that Apple sells a ton of phones and other different devices. We know that Google does the same and so on. We look at how much are they selling now, but how much do we think they're going to sell in the future from a lot of different things?
And, right. So then I would buy into it into the stock saying it's going to be prosperous and I'm going to benefit from this in the future.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is there a way to bet against the company?
Yeah. So that's a good question. That's called shorting. And this is complicated, but I'm going to make it very easy for you. So assume that you think that Apple's going to go up in value and you want to buy it. So what do? You buy shares of the stock and then one day in the future, you hope to sell it at a higher price.
Right.
Okay. So let's say the same thing backwards. Let's say you sell something at a higher price and you buy it for a lower price.
Right.
You're still making money, right?
Right.
We just said it backwards. Let's say that, and don't think about this, everybody, and you don't think about this, but just think what I'm going to say. Let's say that we sell it first. Don't worry about owning it. Sell it first.
Right.
To hope that one day in the future, we could buy it back at a lower price.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if you could follow that logic, it's something called selling stock short. And what will happen is that you will enable yourself to get the stock through a process. It's just through your broker, you could go and put in, instead of a buy order, you put in an order to short the stock. And the whole thing is that one day you're going to hopefully buy it back at the lower price. And therefore, the same equation. You sold it higher, you bought it lower. Right. There's one difference, though. When you buy a stock, and let's say it's trading at $100 a share. How much is the most you could lose? $100, right? Because it could go to zero.
Okay.
Well, how much can you lose if you short a stock? Well, a stock can go how high?
Not sure.
Forever.
Okay.
It can just go up.
Right.
Which means that if you short a stock, technically,
okay,
you can lose money forever. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if a stock can go up forever,
yeah,
is there a certain amount of what's called quote-unquote points? Is there a certain amount of points in the stock market in total?
Yeah. Yes. So there's the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Okay, it's 30 stocks, and it is currently the points, the total points of it, if you will. Like
right.
If you say 100 points for that stock, or this stock, or that stock. The 30 stocks are added up in a certain calculation, and let's say that right now it's about...
So each company is only allowed to have 30 stocks. They're only allowed 30.
No. This Dow Jones Industrial Average
right.
is a measure of something
okay.
which happens to have 30 stocks in it.
Gotcha.
Okay, so the Dow Jones, this is going on since the 1800s with the Dow Jones. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average has 30 stocks. Now the 30 stocks... historically were a certain type of stock. It was like railroads.
Right, industrial.
Industrials. Well, it's not so much anymore. They changed it. Now they got technology in there and a few other things. Anyway, so right now the stock total value of the Dow Jones, of those 30, is $17,500. The way they get at that is they do a calculation. They have dividends that come, interest that comes. They do a divisor. They do all these things. And then the way that it moves is called a... price weighted average. What that means, the higher the price of the stock, the more it will move the entire index. So Visa is, I don't know, trading at 260 or something like that per share. If Visa moves a lot, the Dow Jones moves a lot.
Oh, so there's a lot of influences behind it.
Yes, exactly. And so versus the S&P 500, which I'll give you a guess how many stocks are in that.
I'm going to go like maybe... Well, if it was 30, maybe like five or six?
500.
Wow.
The S&P 500.
Oh, well, I guess that makes sense.
The S&P 100, how many stocks?
I'm going to go with 100
That's
on this
good.
One.
That's good, very good. Yeah. So,
bingo.
So so now the S&P 500 has 500 stocks. It's the same kind of situation, how they add it up and all that. But instead of being what's called a price weighted, which means the weighting of the highest price stock has the greatest significance on the movement. It is a market cap weighted, meaning the stock with the largest size of the company, which would be Apple, if Apple has the largest significance on that. Now, let's say that Apple keeps on getting larger and larger and larger, okay? Well, the more Apple moves, the more the S&P moves.
Right.
So Apple is an incredibly large influence on several different key sectors these days. So they say whatever Apple's does, the market does.
So who can enter these markets? As in the companies, like how are they categorized and what is the process in going and quote unquote going public?
Yeah, so getting back to now, so now we talked about the whole what's a market, right? Right. You know, what's the value of a stock and what's an index?
How to determine the value of the stock. Right.
So now we go way back to the beginning of how does a stock get publicly traded? How does a stock get on the exchange? So there's a process called the IPO market, which is called, or IPO process, which is called the initial public offering. So a stock has to, a company has to start working on getting their financials together, have a track record of sorts. Now what happens, they say, you know what, we're doing so well and all that, we want to go public because we want to get more financing. We'd like to sell some of the shares to the public and then bring the money back to the owners to buy them out in a sense, to a degree, and hopefully get the opportunity to be on this market, which is, of course, this great thing because all these investors are going to hopefully see how great our products are and, you know, then we have a great opportunity to move up. Who knows, somebody will buy them out one day. It's a little bit easier that way. What they do is they go and they go to a major brokerage firm, a Goldman Sachs, which is called Morgan Stanley, Credit Suisse, all these big companies. And what they do is they then start setting the stage for them to go from a private company to a public company. And when they go from a private company to a public company, now their books and records, their financials, their income, their board of directors, everything that they do basically becomes a public situation.
Oh, okay.
So they have a lot more scrutiny. A lot of people looking at them all the time, right? So they then go into the IPO process and they get approval by the exchanges. And then one day through all of this, they take part of the shares of the company and they'll sell them on the open market. Now, IPOs these days have been incredibly beneficial to the insiders, the first guys that bought.
Okay.
Now, a lot of times that's not available to, you know, the smaller investor, but the IPOs maybe go from, you know, $20 to $40, 100% move in on the open. This moves right back up. And then what happens from there is we saw this recently, GoPro is a recent IPO. Pollo Loco is a recent IPO. Some of these companies just keep on going up because there's a lot of excitement about their new product.
Well, the holiday season and whatnot was just here. And
right. And it's a new product. It's a new company.
Right.
So everybody's like, oh, this is a new thing, a new technology. It's exciting. And then they go on the market, and then the IPO is done, and they become a stock. And then one day, if they qualify, they can go on to maybe one of these exchanges. It's pretty hard to get on the Dow. I mean, you got to be an old line, you know, high-end, big company with incredible amount of long-term track record. The S&P 500, also very difficult. It's a larger cap market. It's a larger companies on there. But then there's other things. There's like the NASDAQ 100. There's a Russell 2000. There's other ones that you can get on if you qualify, if you maintain high standards in your company and you make sure that, you know, your books and records are in good shape, then you can enter one of those. If not on any of those, you're still traded on exchange. You got the New York Stock Exchange in New York, obviously.
Right.
You got the NASDAQ, which a lot of smaller stocks are traded on. You have something called the OTC, the over-the-counter exchange, and then the pink sheets. The smaller the company, the more you're going to go from, let's say, the New York to the NASDAQ, then all the way down. So some companies are very
penny stocks, as we call them, right?
What?
I've heard the reference penny stocks. Is that what you'd call them?
Yeah. Penny stocks are like these are low price stocks. Let's call it under a dollar, just
right.
Because even though it's not a penny, but under a dollar, I'd say. Some people even say under $5, but under a dollar, and they're not usually traded on the NASDAQ per se, but like the OTC, because they don't trade that many shares. They maybe trade 1,000 shares a day.
Right.
Some shares are trading, 2 million, 5 million a day.
Wow.
So that's kind of the IPO process. And then they gradually become a more mature company. And as they graduate and get bigger, some of these exchanges, what will happen is that when they're in a certain exchange, like the S&P 500, for example, managers, portfolio managers, investment guys, mutual funds, are required sometimes to buy them. So all of a sudden their shares get a lot more lift potential, a lot more liquidity.
Right. So speaking of like investors and all these different people, why I understand someone would go to an investor to ask for advice for managing their money and mm-hmm. putting it in the stock market.
Right.
But theoretically, anyone could enter into and quote unquote be a player inside the stock market,
right?
Correct.
Yeah. So these days,
right. From there, they would use. I'm sure there's like systems you can use, right? Like
right.
softwares, or you can go and call in. Can you still? I don't know. Back in like the 80s and whatnot. Before,
well, way back then.
Yeah, way back then. You can you'd be able to call the New York Stock Exchange and make your changes, correct?
Well, actually, you'd call a broker.
Oh, okay.
You'd do it on the phone. The broker would actually create. Back in the day, the broker would actually write a ticket out. It's called a ticket. Okay, trade ticket. They write it out, hand it to somebody, or they'd make a call. They get a report back in, I don't even know how long. It would take minutes sometimes.
Right.
Which doesn't sound like a lot of time, but that's a lot of time. And you get it. Okay, yeah, they bought the shares at $34.20. Okay, then you call your client and you get it done and you file the ticket. These days, you still do a ticket, what we call it. But what happens is that an individual can actually have a broker like, whether it's TradeStation or Schwab or TD Ameritrade, whoever it is out there, Fidelity, you can actually have your own account. And right online, you can say, I want to buy 100 shares of this stock. Click the button and you buy it. Wow. So on the other hand, I think the question you said is, or you were getting to was the whole idea of, why would somebody do it themselves versus maybe go to somebody and get advice, right?
Well,
it would cost more money maybe.
Okay.
Right. So you could do trades on your own for, $5, $6, $10, whatever it is. Where if you go to a stock broker, a traditional stock broker, it may cost you $35, let's say. The difference is you're getting advice. The difference is that, you may not know what stock to buy. You may not know how to do the research. You may not know exactly when. For example, let's say that you decide, Brett, to buy stock Alcoa. You do all your research over the weekend, and you say, this company is an aluminum-based company. You and I kind of went to Ford last week. We noticed that the Ford F-150 is now all aluminum.
Correct.
And you're like, there's something interesting there. A lot of cars may be going to an aluminum composite exterior, and that's going to be really a new wave because, you get a lot more potential gas mileage. It's a lot lighter. You got more hauling power, and, this may be a really good thing.
Right.
So you can say, well, if that's going to be a good thing, I look at, Alcoa, major aluminum producer. And if it's a major aluminum producer, I'm going to think that this is going to do well. And you go through some more steps. So you decide on Monday that you're going to hit the button and you're going to buy 100 shares of Alcoa.
Okay, I'm following
you. But in your research, you forgot something. You know what? You didn't realize that Alcoa's earnings are coming out after the close on Monday. This is true, by the way. This is actually happening. After the close on Monday, Alcoa is coming out with earnings. Now, you just bought shares before the most volatile time in any stock period. Four times a year, they come out with their earnings reports. And it could take the stock up or down also all over the place. And if you had someone who you maybe were relying on for advice, maybe they would have told you, do you want to do that? Maybe you want to buy half your shares now, see how the earnings come out, and then see what happens and buy it after the earnings come out. So the reason to use a broker for execution of a stock order, again, just a broker, is because they can help you with some other information, possibly get you a better execution price than not. So that's the reason why to do that. And the third thing is, why would you then hand your money over entirely to a mutual fund, a hedge fund, an investment advisor, right?
Yeah.
So in life, people are busy. You're busy at school. You're doing your thing when you're there, and you got all sorts of other distractions during the day, inclusive of studying, eating, socializing, thinking about things for the future, doing projects, going to class, all this stuff, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So when exactly do you have time to do the research on the stock?
I don't believe I would.
Right. So the thing is, you would like to consider investing in the stock market, but and you may have a good idea here that you may come up with something, you may, like the Ford idea. Or the aluminum or, something else. But you say to yourself, I have X amount of dollars, and maybe what I should do is give it to a professional who does this all the time to actually manage my money. And then maybe also, this is not saying that you'll never have the time to do it. Maybe sometime in the future, you're like, okay, I could do that. So you know what? You say, and this is what I always tell people, take a side fund. So let's say somebody has $100,000 to invest, $50,000 to invest, whatever the number. You say, I'm going to do some of this myself. Now, people sometimes get a little cocky because they see the market's going in a certain way and people make, and they think they just can make money. Their friends are telling them they're making all this money. What I suggest is do yourself a favor. Take a little bit of the money. Take $10,000 and do your own thing until you're comfortable enough with real money to actually invest on your own, because you don't want to all of a sudden become a serious train wreck where you get too aggressive, right. You don't do the right research, you haven't got the right information in front of you. So,
well, there's also the fake money where you enter onto a website and you can do like, you get like $1 million for quote unquote fake money, and you can go about that way and see where your fund grows or decreases.
Right. So we call that paper trading, where you're not using real money. And there's plenty of different sites and contests that you could do with that. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we do a lot of times for testing of some of the algorithms or the trading processes that we use, TradeStation gives you simulated accounts where you just trade in real time in a simulated account.
Is that the software that you use?
I use TradeStation for charting, for certain... I'm trying to keep this to...
I thought it was called Trigger Charts. Or
Trigger Chart. No, Trigger Chart. That's good. Guy, that's nice. Nice promo, buddy. Thank you. So Trigger Charts is a... let me start with this, then I'll go back to TradeStation. Right. So Trigger Charts is we created these algorithms. We created these indicators that can show you things, almost like give you an X-ray of the chart. And what we did is we created these things with all the different history of what we've done. And we actually then use them on a platform called TradeStation.
Okay.
TradeStation we use.
Right, because I remember you were up all night and whatnot coding and sitting on your computer. And...
Yep. That was some time, huh? I remember that. Yep. And it wasn't just one night. So, we've got this great thing. So what we did was I think it's really important to understand what's happening. Because again, you get all these different red and green and arrows and things going on and bells whistling and numbers flying by and charts moving all over the place throughout the day.
And that guy ringing all those bells and all those different animal noises and whatnot.
Are you talking about Kramer? Kramer, yeah. Yeah, that's what he does. So what happens is that it's very important, I think, to kind of get rid of all the distractions and get rid of all the noise. So we built this engine we call it the Commander Series, which has all these different components that we plug into TradeStation, which gives you like the price of the stock and gives you the historical price on a chart. Very easy visual. I'm a visual person. And it's very easy to see visually what's going on versus just look at a table of numbers in Excel. I mean, that gets a little hard in my opinion. Maybe for some other people it's easier. So that's called something called technical analysis. That's another kind of analysis when you're looking at a stock. So I use TradeStation to do that. So you could also execute live, real money, or simulated money. So I always suggest to people, and I have all the time, Brett, is to, you want to at least practice. You always have to practice.
Right.
Write down what you did right and what you did wrong. Keep a record of kind of like, okay, let's get back to the aluminum discussion.
Okay.
So let's pretend that this really went through and you bought your aluminum and the earnings came out, and let's say it didn't do well.
Right.
Well, it would be kind of cool that you write down, did the research on Alcoa. Initially, I thought that it was a good idea because I saw the F-150, it was all aluminum, blah, blah, blah. And then what I did was I went to Yahoo Finance and Google Finance, and I looked at all these different things, and I looked at how the company was doing. I looked at what the analysts were doing. I looked at the chart and all that. I decided to buy it, bought it at X dollars and all that. Then you put a line, outcome, the column, outcome. Well, initially Alcoa lost 5% after the earnings because it was, some reason. What I did wrong, what I did right. What I did right, I did the research right. Yes, all the information. But what I did wrong was I bought them before checking on if earnings were coming out anytime soon. So this is, you don't repeat the mistakes that you've made. We as individuals, I'm including myself in this, we repeat the same mistake over and over and over, and we expect a different outcome. That's called the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and over, and expecting something different to happen. So when you're trading a stock, it makes a lot of sense to kind of like say, okay, when there's real money on the line, what I'm saying? When there's like money on the table.
Oh, wow.
You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
You don't want to like keep on making the same mistake over and over.
Right. Kind of like when we were on the cruise ship with the casino. I did not do so well.
No? Well, actually, that was kind of interesting because that's the same thing about the stock market. You think you have an edge because you saw this guy put his money on the roulette table down the center line, right? Remember that?
Right, right.
And I'm like,
well, I did make good money, but then obviously
it turned.
Right, it went downhill from there.
So, but what I'm saying is that's one thing, and I'm going to tell you why. This is a great segue into something and a good educational piece about how to deal with the markets. One of the biggest mistakes that new investors make is overconfidence. What happens is they do really well with a stock and they set a target of, let's say, 50, just as a number. Stocks get to 50. I love this stock. Now all of a sudden the stock goes to 55 and you think that you are just God's creation to stock picking. You know, you are just right. A genius. Meanwhile, the market just moved along and all that, and you just happen to be, you know, just brought up with the tide. And what happens is people get overconfident and they don't realize it, and they don't step back and try to be, look at the reality of what's happening, the logic of it, and say, you know what, I probably should have sold at 50. And then I talked about this last show, then it kind of gets to 48. Then you got another thing that happens. And you're like, oh, man, I remember going to 50. I'm going to wait. I know it's going to go
right,
down.
Right. You waited out.
And this kind of goes on and on and on
until
and on.
You're high and dry.
Right. So the overconfidence in the stock market, I always say that you don't want to be too underconfident. You don't want to be like freaking out and scared, because what happens with that is you buy a stock and it moves down ever so slightly, you're out.
Right.
Meanwhile, you got to give it a little breathing room. So you want to have a very good balance of confidence, right? You want to be able to say, I believe that this stock is a good stock because of these reasons.
Right. Well, I'm sure you can set alerts for like lines of where you're going, and then for like you can create like a what's the word, I can't think of it right now,
like a range or something.
Yeah, exactly, a range, thank you. A range of, okay, if it goes up this high, I'll sell, and if it goes down this low, I'll sell as well.
Right. But a lot of times people don't do that. But my point is that stick to rules. That's the important thing about making sure that you don't let your investing confidence get away with you, or your fear. So let me tell you what this is called exactly in the vernacular of the stock market. So the two words are, this is the most important thing that drives the stock market at the core: fear and greed. Fear is that I'm going to lose money. Fear is that I'm going to miss out.
Right.
It's two sides of fear. And greed is always the same. It's just greed. I want to make more, 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 more. So fear can knock you out of a stock because you're worried about the fact that it's going to drop and you're going to lose money. Fear can push you into a stock because, oh, crap, man, that stock's moving away without me. And you buy into it at a higher price than you should have. Greed makes you put more into it and get overly enthusiastic to a point that you have too much riding on a particular item. So there's fear and greed. As a matter of fact, there are indicators that will show you the level of fear and greed in theory, not the real fear and greed, but in theory, by the way stocks move, of whether it's in a greed mode, which is oftentimes a time when you want to take money out of it, because when everybody's rushing in, everybody's in on one side of the boat. What happens? We go fishing. What happens when everybody's on one side of the boat?
The boat will tip.
Boat will tip. So the boat, right? So the boat will tip over. And that's what happens with the stock. Oftentimes when everybody's on one side of the boat, you know, you get a little bit of bad news. Let's say it just, boom, everybody runs to the other side. And not only does it tips fast.
Right. And that's when shorting comes into play.
Yeah, it could be. Or the other side is going long or buying in. Like, so for right now, have you noticed the gas prices have been coming down?
Oh, significantly.
Right? So up in Orlando, what's the price that you saw?
It went to like $2.39. I saw it like $2.15 at one point.
Right. So you've been gone for a month. You've been down here in Fort Lauderdale. So you're going to go back to Orlando. I bet you, because I know it was always cheaper, you'll probably see like $2.05.
Okay.
Okay. So that's a big change, by the way, from when you were just there a month ago.
Right. Right? Well, I mean, like even 2 months ago, what was it? Like it was like $3.15, $3.30 per gallon for gas.
So what happened is that oil dropped like crazy. Now everybody's panicked and everybody's coming down with their estimates that oil is going to be in the 40s and the 30s, maybe the 20s or 50s. Everybody's downgrading it and there's all these problems with supply. All of a sudden, everybody got it wrong. Well, once you see that pendulum move so far that everybody is in a union saying the same thing, and the consensus, it's going down. A lot of times that's a time, right, not exactly at that moment, but just about then, that if something happens that is not along that thesis that they're talking about, it slams the other way pretty well.
Right, kind of like the housing market in 08, right?
Right, exactly. It's 07, 08. Everybody thought, oh man, housing is just going up forever.
Right.
But, you know, we say that trees don't grow to the sky, and the fact of the matter is you can't just...
Well, money grows on trees.
It does, in our family.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, what else you got?
I believe I have a good grasp on the information right now, and I don't know, maybe one day I can come in and do another podcast, and maybe we can go more in depth on what it is to be an investor and how to actually perform buying and selling stocks. Maybe we can do like a interactive online video with live feed, maybe.
Oh, wow. Now we're getting crazy. Yeah. That's interesting. So at school, do they have like, I'm sure in the various commons, do they have any like the stock companies there at all? I know I walked through that one time with you. Did you see like Fidelity or Schwab or anybody?
I believe they have a... just something running
the
all
ticker,
the time in
the ticker at the
at the business administrative building, but I'm sure they have like a stock market club and whatnot. There's over like 200 clubs there, so
you've been a member of the stock market club through osmosis, through just being in my vicinity for
oh right all the time. All I hear is da-da-ding, and then I hear stock blah blah is going up, going down.
Yep. I'm boring. What can I say? Anyway, Brett, thanks so much. Listen, I know you're going back to school and you enjoy yourself. I don't know if there's any UCF alumni that are listening. I'm sure there are. Brett's going back up to further his education. And we're just in his freshman year, just beginning the process of fun and sun in Orlando, as well as a little bit of studying, I hope, there.
Yeah. I hope to do some of that at some point.
Oh, all right. Now, we'll end on that, okay?
All right. Well, all thanks right. for having me on the show, Dad. All I appreciate
right.
it.
It's good to get back to the basics and to talk about some of the core ideas that are involved in the stock market. And sometimes we have to also, each one of us, get back to the basics, where we realize that maybe we have to look back at some of the things that we did that weren't so right in terms of not only life, but in terms of the markets and how we invested and how we did things, and take a look at the other opportunities. And I think one of the biggest things that we sometimes forget to do in our daily lives when it comes to investing is to realize there are other alternatives. Maybe you're not looking at the big picture because you're so focused in on what's happening. Step back. Take a couple of steps back for a second. Take a breath and say, okay, what is it that I'm missing? What is it that I should be looking at that would set me up to have a much better experience when investing? And then, you know, you can look at a variety of different books that are out there and learn some things that are new. We talked about this on the New Year's show. If you haven't listened to that, I really would recommend that you do so. And also, I think it's very important to educate your children, young people, to understand what's happening so that they can make the most of their investment experience as well, and to hopefully do so in a way that is not only successful but responsible. In a way that they can, you know, do this over the rest of their lives to make sure that they can amass a good amount of money to fund their retirement and, you know, pay for their kids' education and things that go on. Let's end the show on a couple of points. Let's talk a little bit about oil. Oil did stay below $50 per barrel last week. There was some thought that maybe it was overdone, but we had all those analysts come out and talk about how, well, we're going to be recalibrating our estimates. Some tier one firms came out with thoughts of under 50, maybe towards 40. Some still talking about $20. The targets for 2015-2016 for WTI and Brent have been brought down. I'll tell you something. I did see the inventory report last Wednesday, and it didn't look as bleak as I expected, but there's still some sellers there in the market. Some of it has to do with the fact that we're seeing the dollar strength, but this incredible leg down that we've seen over the last several months is just not letting up. And unloading of oil with the thought that we have just so much oversupply has been going on at an incredible level. And the fact that the Saudis and the Iraq and all the different producers are not letting up has really put a crimp in this. Now, we are seeing that there are also estimates for earnings being dropped on many companies within the oil sector, you know, particularly the drillers and those that maybe don't have the profitability. But I would tell you that take a look at XLE and some of the components of the energy ETF. There may be an opportunity coming here, and it's something that we are starting to look at and take a position in. Now, gold also was very interesting, seemed to get a boost from the news that we saw the terrorist acts in France. Also, with many of the geopolitical tensions rising, we see the Russian debt downgrade. The big question is, can we see more of an upside here? We have the combination of all these worries and problems around the world, markets coming down a bit, and gold, which has been sold off over the last year. Maybe we're going to see a reversion trade happen where we're going to see that what was the loser last year may become the top this year. So watch those technical levels on gold, clearly the 1200 level, which we are above and seemingly rising from right now. And the fact that if we do consider many of the continuing geopolitical issues around the world, this may be something to look at. Now, one last thing that we'll talk about, and probably talk about this on DH Unplugged this week, the U.S. dollar we know is rising. And what effect is that going to have? Well, we know that the exporters around the U.S. that have a tremendous amount of exposure to other countries are having a lot of problems. But one of the things we did see in news item was that Apple is going to be increasing their prices on apps in countries that have seen major currency declines. For example, Canada, Europe, and Japan. They are going to be doing things like, you know, you see an app for 99 cents. They're going to be sending notes to the developers that they want to raise it to $1.19 to make up for the currency, the lack of currency benefit and help they have. And this would not come if it was just a minor issue and maybe even a concern that would be, well, fleeting. With the dollar strength holding up so much, Apple and other companies are starting to look at other ways in which they can bring in their revenue. And again, those companies that have a tremendous amount of exposure outside the U.S. So I think this is going to be big news coming next week, and we're going to see that there may be some other companies doing the same thing with their software, in particular in the tech area. And who knows what's going to happen when it comes to not only hardware, but other goods that are sold. It's going to be interesting when you have a deflationary environment in Japan and in Europe to all of a sudden have them have to pay more for the product. Will that in fact do something like cause a major slowdown in sales, or is it going to see something to help continue to keep up the revenues overall? I'm going to be watching this. I think it's a very interesting situation that is brewing, and the conversation is definitely not ending here as long as the U.S. dollar continues to move, and that is in the face of that good employment report we saw last week. Well, thanks for joining me. I hope you learned a little bit. If you have any questions, of course, you can email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll also take any of your comments for Brett at that particular address as well and pass them on to him. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do so. Andrew Horowitz is my Twitter handle. And I hope you have a great week. We will bring you some great guests next week. Don't forget to listen to DH Unplugged every Tuesday/Wednesday. It comes out. And that's myself and John C. Dvorak talking about all sorts of great things about the stock market, world news, and oftentimes some of the funnier side of business. Again, thanks for joining me. I'll see you next week.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.